Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, April 19th, and this is the third part of our first quarter 2018 wrap-up. We're going to talk about the equity overview. If you haven't, I hope you will link to the web presentation. It will be very useful for you to read that as background. You'll see the section Financial Markets at the web presentation. You can link to it from the commentary. The link is in the subscriber links, or you can go to space.solari.com, but you're going to need the username and password that is at subscriber links. And we build the web presentation dynamically as we publish the different parts of the wrap-up, and then as it's all comes together after the final week, we turn it into the PDF and flipbook and hard copy. So the section that supports equity overview is the financial market section. However, it will be very helpful, I think, if you have listened to News Trends and Stories, particularly part one, but both part one and part two will be supportive of the discussion. The other piece that will be supportive of the discussion is an interview that I have just recorded our quarterly with Saker, which we will publish in 2 weeks. So I would encourage you to listen to that as well. The Rambus of Rambus Chartology publishes a quarterly report for us. And this quarter, Rambus has done a particularly outstanding job. You'll find that as the first piece in the navigation bar under financial charts. And I'm going to use Rambus's piece to sort of organize my thoughts. The full charts for the quarter are beneath both equity markets, fixed income markets, and commodities. And I would really encourage you to run through them to get a really good picture of the first quarter. I'm not going to walk you through them today because it's you can just run through them yourself. I will say this. Many people will say to me, I'm not a technical analyst or I'm not a stock market or securities investor, so the financial charts aren't useful for me. I completely disagree. Financial charts show you what the price action has been, what the trend and direction of prices in different markets has been, what relative values are, and that can tell you a lot about what's going on in the world and why people are behaving the way they are. So I use financial charts not just to understand what's going on in the financial markets, but absolutely to understand what's going on in the world. You know, I always tell young people coming out of college, who go to work for a big corporation, you better buy some of the stock and watch the stock of the company you're working for and the competitors so you can understand why people are behaving the way they're behaving. If you don't understand a company's cost of capital and what's impacting its cost of capital and what's impacting the perception of performance that drives compensation, you're never going to understand why what the culture is or why people are behaving the way they are. So think of these as tools that map our ecosystem that show us a lot about the world, not just what financial markets are doing. So let's start with Rambus's piece. He divides his piece into four sections, really three sections, and then a postscript. The first is the stocks. The second is commodities, and then the third is he does dollars, interest rates, and gold. And then the postscript is a comment on gold and the stock market together. So let me start with the first section. It's very interesting. I come at things, Rambus is what's called a technical analyst, so he looks at price and volume and other sort of behavior of a stock or securities in the markets. I look at the fundamental. What are the fundamental economics that are driving and changing things? And what's interesting is he and I almost always come out at the exact same place, even though we're coming from a different direction. There's remarkable alignment. And his chartology this quarter is particularly powerful because he's focused on the really big picture. What are the long-term trends? There's a very old expression in the investment world, the trend is your friend. You want to understand the trend. We've often heard Franklin Sanders say, align with the primary trend. And that's what Rambis is trying to do, is to focus us on what he believes is the primary trend and why. So let's talk about stocks. If you look at the stock charts, the long-term stock charts, what you see is the crash in 2009. And since then, the stock market has risen in a bull market ever since. We are clearly have been in a bull market. As Rambis says, it's the most hated bull market in the history of the stock market. I don't disagree. You'll note in 2009 how deep and severe the crash was. I used to have a colleague who would say, elevator down, escalator up. And it's a perfect example of that phenomenon. The elevator came down and came down hard, with some portfolios, both stock and bond, being down as much as 50%. What's interesting is if you look at the annual wrap-up piece on pension funds, and I strongly recommend you do, it's an excellent overview of what's happening with the pension funds and gives you the big picture on and a lot of perspective on it. But if you look at the performance data in the pension fund piece, what you'll see is that the U.S. pension funds were down that year by 26%, which is significant given that it's a 60-40 allocation and bonds aren't supposed to go down anywhere that deep, although many did. The foreign pension funds were down much less than ours, so we had a much bigger hole to dig out of. Now, if you look at the pension fund data since then, it certainly looks like on the equity portfolios, the pension funds have come out and made much more because they've been in stocks, and that has helped tremendously. The broad industry data indicates that the entire retirement pool savings hasn't, and I suspect one of the reasons is the IRA and 401k money, the self-directed, was a lot less willing to hold through the down and stay in the equity markets. You know, there was significant fear of staying sort of in a buy and hold position. So it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of IRA and 401k money came out at the worst time and has avoided and sort of missed the opportunity of a lot of this bull market. Unfortunately, there was a tremendous amount of fear porn to encourage them to do that. Anyway, to underscore one of Rambis's key points, the bull market is far from over, but at the same time, we have every reason to believe that more consolidation is likely this year and would be perfectly normal. I know every subscriber must be sick of hearing me say that we're significantly overdue for a major correction. I'm not saying that we're going to get a major correction this year, but I think consolidation is far from over. Part of the challenge of looking at the equity markets, particularly the U.S. equity markets, is that the strength of this bull market and the one, really, the rise in the 90s, depended on corporate profits continuing to grow, which has depended on government continually supporting monopolistic and predatory practices, as well as lavish government contracts and regulations supported by government debt. And that includes the bailouts. I quoted in the annual wrap-up, I provided several quotes from Jeremy Grantham and his colleagues, who Grantham is one of the deans of the Anglo-American investment world. He's got a firm, GMO, in Boston. And Montier, who's one of my favorite authors on sort of investment topics, works for him. And if you look at his quote, the quotes I use from Grantham in the annual wrap-up, Jeremy Grantham is finally throwing in the towel and admitting that the U.S. Congress and the American corporate establishment are engaging in significant monopolistic practices and proposes that it can keep going on for quite some time. If you listen to my discussion with Dr. Farrell on part one, you know my concern is that extreme privatization, aka piratization, is coming to the United States. And I think one of the reasons is to maintain that corporate profit machinery. We've had a decade plus of fueling it with government debt, fueling it with bailouts, fueling it with missing money, fueling it with all these different strategies. And now the question is what is next? And that's part of the reason I'm so concerned about the rape of Russia happening here. And that would be a combination of things. It would be the reengineering of government operations using corporations. It would be predatory deals. It would be transfer of assets at below market prices. There was an excellent study in The Economist on January 2017, which I pointed out several times before over the last year, and I would encourage you to go back and read it. It's called The Retreat of the Global Company. The subtitle is, "The Biggest Business Idea of the Past Three Decades is in Deep Trouble." Let me just quote some of this one paragraph from it. The return on equity of the top 700 multinationals has dropped from a peak of 18% a decade ago to 11%. The returns on the foreign operations of all firms have fallen too, based on balance of payment statistics. For the three countries which have historically hosted the most and biggest multinationals, America, Britain, and the Netherlands, return on investment on foreign investment has shrunk to 4 to 8%. The trend is similar across the OECD. What they're describing is, on the first wave of globalization, the big multinationals had a field day. And now they're running into a variety of forces, including much more significant local competition around the world. And one of my beliefs is that means that there's increased pressure on them and the politicians to allow them to go much deeper and get a much bigger piece of their local market share. So that means using digital technology and political clout basically to soak up far more of the pie from both labor and small business. If you've read the most recent two articles I wrote about the AT&T situation, the first one, a recommendation to our subscribers to change their email, and then net neutrality, why Marsha Blackburn will lose the Tennessee Senate race, you understand my concern that part of what could happen after both the 2019 after this coming midterm election, and then in 2021 after the presidential election, I think the tearing up of net neutrality will be used by the telcos and the corporate infrastructure to basically engage in significant predatory efforts against small business. I often tell the story of the venture capitalist I was talking to at the Aspen Institute who looked me dead in the eye and said, "Look, we can re-engineer all jobs with software, artificial intelligence, and robotics, and that's what we're going to do. That's what's going to happen." You know, he saw that as a complete fait accompli. Now, you know, it's one thing if you're doing that in an open market competition. It's another thing if you're using government tearing up the net neutrality rules and other rules to engage in massively predatory practices, either illegal or should be illegal other than Congress changing the rules. And let's face it, massively subsidized capital engineered into central points by a variety of different parties. So I don't see that effort as being one that's market-driven. I see it as being highly predatory once you look at sort of an integrated strategy of what's been happening. Now, historically, government profits have depended on a literally geyser of government debt. So we had the housing bubble, and then we took the bailouts and swapped the debt out of the banks and into the governments, and then had governments, particularly in the emerging markets, issue massive amounts more debt to keep the economy going. We just saw a new announcement that world debt hits a record $164 trillion. The announcement was, global public and private debt swelled to 225% of global gross domestic product in 2016, the last year for which the IMF provided figures. With government debt in particular reaching an all-time high, and with the bailouts, the $21 trillion missing money, and QE being over, one of the few remaining opportunities is reengineering and privatizing government operations and transferring government assets, particularly at below market prices. So part of why I'm concerned about this is I'm looking at a hungry beast lumbering around looking for more food, and I'm looking at a pile of stuff over here that is not sufficiently protected. The more we enter into a lawless environment, the more that hungry beast can start to scarf up things. One of the things in particular that concerns me is the extent to which we see the military factions that basically assumed control of the governmental mechanism or lead control of the governmental mechanism with the last election. Essentially, we've seen them do a deal with Amazon. So CIA and the 17 intelligence agencies are in a cloud, in the Amazon cloud. But the military this year did a big sole source deal with Amazon. They're going into the Amazon cloud. Depending on how much more you put into the Amazon cloud, you're going to get the ability to basically re-engineer the whole government at high speed through Amazon if you wanted to, which means that something radical could happen much faster. There's a new case in the Supreme Court where there's a discussion slash debate about collection of sales tax by small companies. If by any chance, and I'm going to watch this closely, there's any pressure for Amazon to do the collecting for the companies on their platform, that would be a real signal to me that something big could happen through a re-engineering through the Amazon cloud. But we see other examples of the kinds of things I'm worried about. One is I posted 2 weeks ago a story of a Chicago investment firm that has made a proposal to Connecticut to purchase a whole bunch of its real estate, including, I think, the Capitol, in a leasing deal that would give them an unbelievably sweet yield. And they're doing it because Connecticut is in real trouble. And then, of course, the two pieces on AT&T net neutrality, I really encourage you to read, because I think it's important to understand that this is going to put you and your household and your business at significant financial risk in ways that initially are very invisible, but they could get very clear. Don't underestimate the power of new technology and politics that favor monopolies to maintain corporate profits and don't underestimate the kind of predatory practices that will go on. We've certainly seen a lot in the last 20 years, but it could get a lot worse. The backdrop for this is what I've argued in my Planet Equity presentations and the wrap-ups over the last 5 years, and that is that there's been a global decision at the G7 at the highest levels to try and operate much more through corporations than governments. And part of that is encouraging securitization or equity securitization in equity markets all around the world. This is what happened after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the development of equity markets all around the world. So there's a lot of new growth, both simply companies moving into the publicly traded markets accessible to investors, or the brokerage platform making foreign stocks more accessible, whether they become ADRs here or you can get access to those markets through a digital platform, or simply the growth of those companies as more and more globalization occurs. So Planet Equity is on and the equity markets are growing, and one of the key questions there is going to be, will the emerging markets bring in investors as well as just companies looking for capital? Because most of the capital has been flowing from the pension fund and retail customer in the G7 and Western world, and the emerging markets have yet to develop a broad-based investor participation in equities. We'll see if that happens. Of course, our danger is if there is a strategic desire to have government, to have corporations run and everything, there continues to be a strategic desire to have the taxpayer pay for everything. So the perfect example we saw was the healthcare mandate in Obamacare, where corporations got the government to mandate that we had to buy something from them that we wouldn't buy from them in an open market. So they still want the taxes and they still want the regulatory mandate. That's the danger, and that's what we've been seeing way too much of in the United States. Now, the big challenge for the stock market and all markets, in fact, is the reserve currency status of the U.S. and the Anglo-American Alliance. If the dollar should lose its reserve currency status, it changes the game of all players in the syndicate in a major way in all markets. And that's one of the things we've been challenged in looking at both the equity and fixed income markets. We seem to be hanging at an inflection point. The perfect example of that kind of behavior is what's going on in Syria and the absurdity of the events in and around the squabble between the Anglo-American Alliance and Russia and China. As I said, Saker and I had a great discussion about this, and I would really encourage you to listen to it, and I won't try and repeat it here. But if you look at the equity markets and the bull market that we've had since 2009, that's all predicated on those players having the benefit of playing in a syndicate that enjoys reserve currency status. And if that changes, all bets are off, those inflection points could turn in radically different ways. But right now, that's not the case. The dollar is the reserve currency. We'll talk more about it in a second. So what does the chart say? The chart says we're in a bull market, whether you like that or not. And corporations are strong. And I agree, unfortunately, with Jerry Grant that right now the politics support incredibly predatory and monopolistic. He didn't say predatory, he said monopolistic, but I'll say predatory. But the politics support monopolistic and predatory behavior by the corporations to scarf up and do whatever they need to scarf up profits. I don't like it, but it is that way. We're in a bull market. At the same time, it looks to me like consolidations are probably not over and we're coming into summer. As of several years ago, 95% of the growth in the U.S. stock market came between November and June. And there's an old saying, sell in May and go away. And the numbers and statistics bear that out. So I'm in no hurry to be increasing equity participation right now. So expect consolidations. And if you're not in, that's an opportunity for you. But if you're looking to put new money in the stock market, summer may not be the best time for you. Montier at Grantham's firm at GMO has several pieces that I've linked to in the annual wrap-up that underscore the fact that the emerging markets really are more attractive than the U.S. The U.S. is traded way beyond both Europe and the emerging market. Now, emerging markets had a better year and did some catch-up last year, but it's far from over. So I agree with Montier. Emerging markets look more attractive, but I don't underestimate a post-election privatization pig fest and new technology to continue to support U.S. corporate profits, which are going to get a short-term boost from the tax reform. So tax reform has helped them tremendously for now. Anyway, the prudent strategy in this environment is to stay invested. As you know, I prefer hedged, and that's not hedge fund hedge. It's H-E-D-G-E-D, hedged equity for now. I'd rather give money up on the upside than run the risk of a big down now. But I think the number one thing I've seen that to lose investors' money over the last 10 years is getting fear porned out, either during the consolidations or just staying out. And basically getting 0% being debased in fixed income. But I think in this environment, if you're going to be in, it's very important to lean towards excellence and diversification. Unfortunately, there's a lot of money being made on war and criminality and lawless activities and things that are increasingly inhuman. And this is one of the reasons I've started to do an ESG screen in my investment advisory company. I think there is a shortage of screens that really screen out the companies that are doing things, whether lawless or criminal or inhuman. I don't think there are good screens that screen out sort of criminality as a business model. And And I've been very frustrated not having that available, so I've decided to do it myself. So how do you stay invested without financing more genocide? One thing some people do is just look for good local investment options. It really comes down to your unique situation and your time and abilities. But for people who are good at doing real estate or doing their own business, it's one of the reasons I think more and more people are doing that, because it gives them the ability to keep it really, really clean and to keep a close eye on it. It's a tremendous amount of work, your own business or real estate. But for those who are good at it and like it, increasingly I see it turn out very well. So those are my comments on the first part, part one, stocks. And again, please screen the Rambus piece. It's very, very good. Part two, Rambus looks at commodities and says, and I agree absolutely with him, the consolidation in commodities is over. We had a commodity super cycle and then commodities crashed. And now it looks like they're coming back. I think this is a tricky process in figuring out how to take advantage of this, because there are a lot of political tensions. We now see the beginning of trade wars, and there's also major technological disruption. So this is an area where you're going to have to sort of pick your way through. But it certainly argues for focusing on stocks that are going to benefit from increased revenues as you get a resurgence in commodities, and markets that can take advantage, such as Brazil, Canada, or Australia. Of course, the danger is the resurgence in commodities means we go to war and kill each other over access to control of natural resource, or the ability to be able to swap natural resources for phony baloney money that we just printed. So if anything, a resurgence of commodities means that whether it's trade wars or actual physical wars, the drumbeats of wars are going to continue to increase as the peak everything tension increases. I love that quote of Jimmy Rogers. I was at the New Orleans Gold Conference. Somebody asked Jimmy Rogers if he was worried about peak oil. He said, "Forget peak oil, it's peak everything." Anyway, as I said, look for your prudent strategy in commodities is to look for areas of the world and stocks that are going to benefit from the growth in commodities and not the ones who are going to struggle with the higher expenses. I should note, one of the things you see as you drive, as I drive around the country or talk to people around the country, is the pressure to maximize production of oil and gas and agricultural commodities in this country is off the charts. And that's because in a world where the dollar loses its reserve currency status, those are our big exports. We're now a net exporter of oil and gas. And clearly one of our amazing competitive advantages is what a low price of energy we have within North America. And as more and more operations are repatriated back, that's going to put incredible pressure on the oil and gas industry to produce. And it's one of the areas where you've got gangbuster growth. Not everybody's making a ton of money because prices are low, but if your business operates off of volumes, wow, you're going full blast. It's the same in agriculture, even though I think farmers are going to have a tough year this year because some of their prices are down and their expenses are clearly up. The pressure to produce as much food as possible, again, a lot of it for export is going to be very, very strong. And as the dollar weakens in terms of market share, the pressure to produce those commodities is going to be exceptionally high. Okay, so let's turn to part three. Part three, Rambus gathered the U.S. dollar, bonds, and gold. First, he looked at the dollar, and the dollar really has been very surprising in its behavior. I've been very concerned that it would break the 92 line. It clearly has broken the line, but it's kind of seesawing between 89 and 92. It's not taking that drop straight down to 80, which I was very worried about. And it's, again, it's one of the reasons that the war in Syria is so baffling, because the war in Syria is really about Iran, and Iran is really about Russia and China, and the hegemony of the dollar. Again, I had a great discussion with Saker. I'm not going to repeat it here, but I would encourage you to listen to that when it publishes. To a certain extent, our strategy is just to economically drain Russia and Iran until we get our way. It's certainly a very expensive strategy. We've obviously spent a fortune in the last two decades to do it. I would encourage you, in the annual wrap-up, in one of the News Trends and Stories, we put up a lot of the links and stories on the steps that Russia, China, and the BRICS are taking to move flow away from the dollar. But I would point out they're still stuck in massive, particularly China, in massive dollar debts. And those dollar debts are going to give the dollar much more strength than I think most people understand. You know, one of the expressions I love about the dollar is that it's dangerous but dominant, because it's way too dependent on military force to maintain its way. And if you look at how we're trying to maintain control in the Middle East, it's through very negative action. So we're leading by force and control, and not leading by attraction. Not a good place to be. Then Rambis turns to interest rates. As I've said several times in the Solari report, we're chasing LIBOR up. So the bank interbank rate has been going up. It's one of the reasons the banks are swimming in profits. If you ever wonder whether the financial coup d'etat was successful, just read the Wall Street Journal for the last week and see the extent to which everybody, you know, all the bad guys are making money and have more market share than they, you know, ever dreamed of. So engineering the financial coup d'etat was very successful and very profitable for all the lead players. If you look at the long-term bond chart that Rambis provides in the interest rate section, you can see why I keep talking about what a profound change this is. We've had interest rates falling since 1980, which means bonds were rising in price all along the way, and that meant government could basically borrow for almost nothing. And as I said, the world debt has now hit $164 trillion. And what this means is the era of free, cheap money, government money, is over. And that is a huge change. So instead of living in a world where government is just pumping out lots and lots of money, now government's going to have to pay that debt back and struggle with a higher cost of capital. And it's going to push us more towards an equity-based world. And again, that's a world of corporations. If you look at the bond market, it's not surprising corporate debt has been generally, for the last 2 years, outperforming government debt. And I think the market is concerned, for obvious reasons, about credit quality. It's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about the disinformation campaign going on that is encouraging debt abrogation or promoting lawlessness around obligations of the U.S. government, because when it gets this expensive to maintain your obligations, these kinds of lawlessness starts looking attractive in a way that it's really not. But it's very easy for certain parties to take advantage of that. And then Rambis turns to gold. What Rambis argues is that gold has been in a long-term bull market and still is. We've been in a pretty serious consolidation since 2011, but he thinks that the uptrend channel supports the bull market and that remains intact. I agree with him absolutely. And in fact, I think gold could start to get attractive here. So I certainly, if you don't have your core position in precious metals, you want to get it. But I think as part of the resurgence of commodities, gold has a chance to have a good year this year. There's a part four, really a postscript that Rambis added after doing the first three parts. And one was he did a chart to show that gold and stocks often move together. And and that gold and stocks in this environment could absolutely move up together. And I agree, because I'll have to tell you, you know, there's $164 trillion in the bond market that needs some place to go. And that's going to be stocks and commodities, and that's certainly going to include gold. I think the thing to watch that could really clobber both stocks and gold and commodities is interest rates. And traditionally, where you see interest rates rise slowly, the markets can handle some kind of rise without tanking. So historically, if interest rates rise, stay within 150 basis points within a year, the stock market shouldn't have a problem. But if it accelerates and goes faster, you could get yourself in a real situation. So that's one of the reasons I keep a very close eye on the dollar, the U.S. dollar, and I keep a very close eye on interest rates, because any major shift in the infrastructure on the dollar could change everything radically in all charts, all markets. But a rapid rise in interest rates could do the same. Wouldn't be as big a paradigm shift, but it could certainly be dramatic. So I would definitely encourage you to, if you're going to watch anything in the markets, keep your eye on the U.S. dollar index. So that's it for my first part of just looking at where we are in the financial markets. To summarize, on stocks, I think we're in a situation where you want to be a holder, but you're not looking to put in a lot of new money. If you want to move in now, I'd stay hedged, or I would average in. I just think the summer, if you wanted to average in, I'd start in the later part of the summer, depending on how consolidations go. Fixed income, we're rising, so I would stay short and take advantage of being able to roll over into the rises. You certainly want to stay in high quality. So I'm comfortable with the right kinds of municipals, the right kind of corporates, but just really stay high quality. And then if they're right for you, whether it's your own business and you can protect it against the predatory monopolists, you have to be very careful there. We'll talk about that in the next section. Your own business or certainly investing in things that permanently lower your expenses, resilience, or income-producing real estate. If they're appropriate for you, and remember, they're not appropriate for everybody, but if they're appropriate for you, I think all of them potentially done well could be very attractive. So keep an eye on the local opportunity. In the second part of our presentation tonight, I want to talk a little bit about your resiliency. In part one of News Trends and Stories, Dr. Farrell and I talked about the possibility of the rape of Russia happening in the United States, which could accelerate the need for resiliency for folks in the United States. But I think globally, if you look at what's happening, we're all going to have to increase resiliency. And let me go through some comments that I want to make about this to help you think about the changes that are upon us and what you need to do about them. The first thing I want to say is I'm a lot more concerned about your mind than I am about your money. If anybody wants to do a good job of managing their finances or their assets, they need a clear, coherent mind. And if there's anything in the environment that worries me, it's the rollout of 5G technology and what it's going to mean in terms of both EMF radiation and mind control technology. I happen to believe that the mind control technology is very serious and getting much more serious. We're looking at basically digital technology is basically dramatically improving the possibilities of what is available in terms of general mind control of the population. And the biggest issue for me is, how do I get away from this stuff? I've already done a great deal to move to a rural area where the EMF radiation is much less than certainly in the big cities. But even now with 5G coming, and of course with the problems I've had here with both cell tower and smart meters, the big question for me is, how do I get away from it? And how do I make sure my mind is clear and coherent, my physical energy is clear and coherent? If you've read Elena Freeland's new book, Under an Ionized Sky, or look at the review that you can link to from the first quarter 2018 web presentation. It's under Space-Based Enterprise, if you just drop down the navigation bar. This is a global network, and so how are we going to keep our minds clear with these kinds of electronics and EMF radiation? So the first thing I want you to think about is, what could 5G do to you? I did an interview with Jason Bodden-Smith last year about EMF radiation, and you might want to listen to that. I'm going to be spending time with Jason when I'm in Australia, and more questions about how do we avoid it, and how do we protect our minds? And I must say I have more questions than answers. I think we're all going to have to be figuring this out together. So the thing I would think about when it comes to resiliency is how you can best support, nurture, protect your mind, and protect it from the kinds of environmental pollution that we're facing. The second thing I wanted to say was, we are in an environment where friction is rising. It's funny, I'm a great believer of always, you know, if I'm curious about somebody, I read their book, and I decided, okay, if Marines are going to run the country, and Marines essentially are one of the key factions behind Trump winning the election, I'm going to go get the U.S. Marine Corps manuals and read them and see what they say about the world. So I proceeded to get a copy of a book called Warfighting, which is a U.S. Marine Corps manual, and on the if you look at the table of contents, it's the nature of war, the theory of war, preparing for war, and the conduct of war. And one of the first quotes in the book is from von Clausewitz, quote, "Everything in war is simple, but the simplest thing is difficult. The difficulties accumulate and end by producing a kind of friction that is inconceivable unless one has experienced war." Well, frankly, if you're in the independent media, as I am, then you you live in a state of war. But the nature of war, so much of it is operating through the information systems, through the phones, through the smartphones, through the media, whether it's information war, literally cyber hacking and surveillance and all these different kinds of things. The friction is rising, and it's very expensive and unbelievable. And I suspect that it's going to increase significantly. So one of the things I want you to think about when you think about how you create resiliency is, how do you train yourself to be to deal with states of invisible war? You know, I'm always talking about spiritual warfare, because I think to a certain extent we are engaged in spiritual warfare. Another thing that can happen that help you, I think, are books or materials that help you think about dealing in situations of extreme change. Dmitry Orlov has a series of books about collapse. He was in Russia during the Rape of Russia and lived through that collapse. And he's done a series of books on collapse, comparing the Russian collapse with what collapse might look like here, what worked, what didn't, what people dealt with. There's also a great book and interview in the archives, Lawrence Gonzalez's book on called Deep Survival, about surviving extreme wilderness experiences. And one of the things you see when you read examples of people going through, or societies going through, extreme changes is how the lessons that come out of success in those wilderness experiences are very, very appropriate to the process of extreme society or culture change. Finally, there's a piece that I wanted to bring to your attention, and I wanted to go through it because it's as appropriate now as it was when I wrote it. In the 2016 annual wrap-up that we published in January 2017, and I'll make sure there's a link in the subscriber links for the equity overview commentary, I wrote a piece for Global Harvest called What Does It Mean to Me? Issues to Consider as You Read the 2016 Annual Wrap-Up. Essentially, I had said in all the wrap-ups that I'd ever published, you know, we're going to slow burn this year. And then in the beginning of 2017, I said, all bets are off. And so I wanted to to encourage people to be more resilient. And so I wrote a series of suggestions, and I'm going to go through them now, but the link will be up there. You can read them. One of the first is reliable maps. You need good information to survive an environment with this much change. You don't have time for bad information. I continue to be very concerned. I get a lot of questions from my subscribers asking me about different forms of what I call fear porn or hope porn or disinformation. And I would say that we're all still digesting a huge amount of fear porn and disinformation. And I think it's a terrible use of your time. So please make sure you have sources of information, whether it's the Saleri Report or others. I try very hard in the Saleri Report to point you to things that I use. And again, one of the things I always use is trying to understand how the money works around me. But please be very discerning about your information sources and cut out the fear porn, cut out the disinformation. Municipalities. We've all lived in a world where we could just assume that our state government and our local government worked, or most of us have, and we didn't have to worry. And what's remarkable to me is that most people, if you ask them how their local and regional government and government finances work, they have no idea. And we're coming into a period where that needs to change. You need to take the time to get your mind around what the economics of your local government and your state government is, and you need to take interest in your local elections and who represents you, because high-quality people can make a very, very big difference to your immediate life. Let me give you a couple of examples. We just saw a town in Illinois which had its tax revenues garnished by the state controller, and overnight it had to lay off 40 workers. They called them safety workers, but it's basically firemen and policemen. Now, I don't need to tell you, in many areas of this country, if you lay off all the policemen, who's going to show up next? And it's not very nice. You know, add to that the effort to try and cancel the Second Amendment, and you're talking about a very dangerous situation. But if you look at the pressures on the underfunding of state and local pension funds, or the underfunding of other critical services, or the underfunding of maintenance over time, we're coming into a period where we could see dramatic changes in services, dramatic changes in taxes, and a dramatic impact both on your taxes as well as on your real estate appraisal. And so, whereas before you could remain on autopilot and not focus on what was going on in state and local government, you need to understand that you have serious liabilities for government's debt and government's unfunded liabilities, and that could hit you in a variety of ways. To those of you who also have municipal bonds, if you're not paying attention as to which municipal bonds you have, that could also hit you in a variety of ways. There's wide differentiation in the quality of the finances and the funding of state and local pension funds in some states. One of the reasons I live in Tennessee is our state pension funds are almost completely fully funded, and our budget balancing and management are very, very conservative. I keep bragging about this, but I live in a town where we could go several decades. We could stop collecting taxes and pay our expenses for several decades. Take a look and get knowledgeable about the long-term debt and the long-term funding, pension funding obligations of the jurisdictions in which you are legally liable. Remember, you are legally liable. And, you know, these things can pop up and surprise you. They can surprise your tax obligations. They could put a lot more pressure on local enforcement bureaucracies to start doing enforcements that raise money. This could have a dramatic impact on the quality of your life and quality of services. So please start to pay attention to what your hidden liabilities are for state and local government. Controlled demolitions and reengineerings was a section I wrote about. There are all sorts of economics that are not going to continue to work. And whether it's companies going bankrupt or doing radical reengineerings like some of the airlines going into bankruptcy so they can shed their pension funds, there are going to be more situations where you're counting on an insurance company, you're counting on a employer, you're counting on a pension fund, and suddenly all bets are off. So you need to understand what the, you know, what the situation is on the companies in your life. It could impact your, if you have annuities or insurance, it could impact it again, municipal and state governments. We just saw more discussion of Hartford, Connecticut filing for bankruptcy. What could happen to you as a citizen of Hartford if Hartford goes into bankruptcy? So we're going to have more and more controlled demolitions, and they could affect you, and you need to be prepared. The third thing one of the things I said in the piece for the 2016 annual wrap-up is get out of the expendable part of the budget. Everyone, many, many people in the G7 nations are highly dependent on income that comes directly or indirectly from government. And the reality is many of those activities have what I call a negative return on investment. You need, if you are dependent on government income, you need to significantly and seriously explore finding a way to diversify into something which is non-governmental or not in the expendable part of the government. So it obviously it very much depends on which particular part you're in. But I've seen and heard many proposals now from activists around the country proposing to do things that would cancel all military pensions, all government pensions, all Social Security, all food stamps, you name it, any government source, federal government source of income. So, and my concern is not just that that get canceled or cut, but that they slowly drain. You know, you keep, if you're depending on Medicare and Medicaid, you know, they're saying it's coming, but it never comes, and they slowly drain your operation. I've seen schools wait for months to get reimbursed by the state, and they're draining their situation. They're draining their operation. Okay, big, big one, shadow work. The amount of shadow work is what I call, I have a piece that I wrote in 2015 called Shadow Work. And this is the work that suddenly defaults to you. It wasn't in your plan, it wasn't in your budget, but it drains an enormous time of enormous amount of your time and money because the people and institutions that you're dealing with can't honor their contracts. We're watching a deterioration of integrity across the system. And of course, you see on a centralized basis, the centralized system moving into control. And as it pressures people to go along, then they default or do things that cause you more time, more effort, more work. And this is why I keep stressing the point. It's absolutely imperative, whether it's your bank, whether it's where you take your dog to get a bath. You need to make sure that all the people that you're dealing with are people of very high integrity. I hate to say it, but, you know, for example, you have more and more enforcement bureaucracies paying people for tips or to turn people in. You know, you just don't want people like that in your life. I can't tell you how much time and money it wastes when some low-rent person makes up a story so they can, you know, they can get a, or they can tip off an enforcement. It can take, you know, hundreds of hours to get rid of the mess that results and to make it clear that you're innocent, you're not guilty. So I would just, I told the story in the Global Harvest. Let me just read this. Research indicates that up to 80% of all drug cases in the United States may be based on information from informants. And the 60 Minutes program estimated that 100,000 people are currently working as confidential informants. 100,000 people. The 3,100 counties in America. So, okay, already imagine how many people in your county are working as confidential informants. The piece starts with Andrew Sadek, a college student who was caught selling $80 worth of marijuana. Chief Jason Weber, head of a four-county drug task force in eastern North Dakota and Minnesota, warned Andrew that he's facing up to 40 years in jail unless he wants to help himself and work as an enforcement. Andrew was forced to set up and buy drugs from three other people. Before he was able to finish his assignments, he was found in a river with a bullet through his head. Okay. So when you're dealing with enforcement bureaucracies that are trying to make money, that's what happens. So it's one of the reasons that I'm always insisting that you be absolutely impeccable about obeying the law and do everything you can to support a spirit of lawfulness and of being lawful, because entrapment is a serious problem, and it's going to get more serious as the effort to centrally control increases. So be a person of high integrity, but please make sure you're doing business with institutions and other people who maintain very high integrity. One of the things subscribers say to me a lot is, I'm really worried because so many people around me don't understand what's going on, and I need to help them. And I'm saying, no, you need to help yourself, and you need to help the people around you who want your help in knowing what's going on. Not everybody's going to make it. We're going through a major, major change. And unfortunately, not everybody's going to make it. And you're going to have to pick and associate with people who want to make it and are willing to do what it takes to make it. Okay, next point, globalization. I don't care how many trade wars we have, globalization is not going away. Globalization wants to happen, and it's here. Certainly in North America, we tend to be a very provincial bunch. We don't tend to learn other languages. You know, if you go to Europe, I run around Europe with friends who speak five languages as though it's perfectly natural. It's very embarrassing. So we need to be part of a global world. We need to get out there and travel. We need to learn. We need to encourage children, grandchildren, the children we love to do the same and learn other languages. I'm always talking with clients and subscribers who have kids or grandkids and saying, you know, get them learning Mandarin, get them learning Spanish, get them learning other languages. So globalization is going to keep on happening, and it's a mighty, mighty economic force. And Asia, the per capita incomes in Asia are converging. So that means that ultimately Asia is going to be a much bigger market than Europe and the United States, even combined. It's just the way of the world, and you don't want to let that pass you by. You want to participate in that and understand that and be part of it and not let it alienate you or marginalize you, whether in a personal or business way. So get with the trend, because globalization is going to continue. If you think globalization is going to continue, automation is really going to continue. Now, automation and what it means to each person and your life and your business. I'm doing everything I can to get digital technology out of my house. I just bought a brand new stove that has not one iota of digital anything on it. You know, it looks like it was made 80 years ago, probably. You know, the design probably was. So it's very camp. This is the only thing I can say. So I'm doing everything I can to dumb down the automation within my house. But at the same time, as software re-engineers, if you look at what I'm doing in my business, you know, it continually evolves and changes. And you've got to get, it's sort of like what Coke doing new Coke. You know, if you don't do it to yourself, Pepsi's going to do it to you. So in the 2016 annual wrap-up, I put in a study from McKinsey Global Institute where machines could replace humans, and it shows the different industries where robotics are going to get us first. But here's the thing. If you're operating a small business or you're self-employed, figure out how you can use automation to jump the curve on automation so that somebody doesn't come along as a predator and automate you out of what you're doing. Okay, health. And this one is a biggie. If you look at what's happening with environmental pollution, In many areas, certainly in the United States, life expectancies are going down. That's the wrong direction. It can have a very dramatic impact on your finances if you lead with your health now. And there's a great deal you can do. There's a lot on the Solari report we've done about how to build a strong immune system and how to detox. But you need to get really radical about your health because it can make an enormous difference to, you know, both mind, MAPS, physical energy. It can be the difference of being able to manage and deal with this kind of change or not. Okay, next category, invisible invasive technology. The nature of the technology is horrible. You know, I don't, it's in one sense, it's so ugly and depressing that it's almost difficult to talk about. It's so bad. On the other hand, I think there's tremendous benefits. You know, I'm always quoting my old pastor, if we can face it, God can fix it. If you can face the truth about what's going on with the invasiveness of technology, the invasiveness of mind control, the use of the intelligence from invasive systems to manipulate us, and even the dangers of technologies like we see in Kingsman, The Secret Service, where basically people are turned into killers. If we can face it, then it radically improves our ability to navigate it. And I'm on a journey to figure out how to protect my mind from EMF radiation, and I'll continue to share what I learn with you. Another thing I mentioned was I had a section called Gotta Be In It to Win It. It's an old Wall Street expression. The people who've been most harmed over the last 10 or 20 years are the people who said, okay, the end of the world is coming, I'm going to run away. I'm not going to build my skills. I'm not going to have faith that I can make it through this. I'm not going, you know, they receded and they tried to pull out of the flow and it was a mistake. The way you're going to succeed in this environment is to learn, to grow, to change, and to be a participant in making the world better and finding a way for the world to support you in making the world better. So, and it's interesting, the people I know who are the happiest are the ones that are in the thick of things. So don't allow your sense of offense at what's going on to get you to recede and pull away. You want to dive into the middle of things, whatever that means to you. The next category was called, and this is for U.S. citizens, never agree to a constitutional convention. And this one, I think, is, I can't emphasize enough. I've said it all year throughout 2017, but I'm going to keep on saying it. The cover of our 2017 second quarter wrap-up was, enforce the Constitution or you can kiss your money goodbye. And I'm just going to say that again. Enforce the Constitution or you can kiss your money goodbye. We're headed into a tipping point, and the lawlessness is at the point where, if you look at how predatory the corporate infrastructure is becoming and how lawless the politics are becoming, the reality is unless we assert the law and protect the law and protect the Constitution, we could all lose everything. I mean, we could literally not just lose our money, but our minds. If you're being chipped and mind controlled, you know, they're going to get your money, but they're going to get a lot more than your money. So we are really at a point where we need to do everything to make sure that we don't lose the Constitution. And the reality is there are no financial solutions to how do I protect your money in a world where there's no law? Because the only thing you can protect is with a gun. And, of course, it's one of the reasons that the powers that be want to pull the guns in. So this is a very serious issue. Many people say, oh, well, they've trashed the Constitution anyway, and they don't really ignore it, or they really don't pay attention to it. And so it doesn't really matter. Yes, it does really matter. If they can pull down the Constitution, then they get away scot-free with all the money that got stolen, including the $21 trillion. And there's nothing anyone can do about it. And if you look at what they're doing now with the Constitution in place, it's quite remarkable what can be done and the speeds at which it can be done if they're able to tear it up. And that includes stripping the federal, state, and local government of its remaining assets at 10 cents on the dollar. And then finally, the final section in this section in the 2016 annual wrap-up called What Does It Mean to Me? I have something I call Turtle Fourth. If you're a new subscriber and you haven't heard me use the expression, there's a commentary on the website about Turtle Fourth, and I'll make sure there's a link to it in the subscriber links. But basically, turtling forth means never giving up no matter what's happening. The nature of a high-friction environment is things can look very hopeless when they're not, or they can certainly feel hopeless, or they can feel exhausting. And the key is to never, ever quit. If you read Gonzalez's book, Deep Survival, he talks about the people who make it are the ones who literally, they focus on the next 3 seconds because things are so bad that they just, the way to not quit is to focus on the small, the intimate, and what is feasible in the next 3 seconds. So turtle forth is very important. Don't quit, not ever, no matter what. It's the people who keep turtling, which are the ones who invent and create the pathways and attract the, you know, the energy that, that creates the momentum that makes it possible. So, absolutely turtle forth. We're in for quite an exciting ride, over the next 2 to 5 years. Not that the last 10 years hasn't been pretty exciting too, but the change is accelerating because the economics, you know, we've been trying to keep things going in many different areas. And depending on what happens with the reserve currency, you know, it's going to change. Either we're going to get a whole paradigm shift if the dollar does not remain the reserve currency, or if it does, if you look at the extreme force we're going to have to go to get it to, there's going to be ever more really invasive and very unpleasant central control. So this could go in many, many different directions. It's one of the reasons we do so much scenario planning on the Solaria report. But I think it's the time has come to be very serious about getting a high resiliency in your personal planning, in your whatever it is you do to generate an income, and then in sort of your expense budget and your living situation. Anything you can do to increase resiliency, and again, it's, you know, it's very different for each person, but anything you can do to increase resiliency, it's very important to do. I would say we have between now and January, and then the change is absolutely going to accelerate after the election. So ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the first quarter 2018 equity overview. As always, I do, when I think about your time and your money, I wish you success and prosperity and good hunting.